To International Edition on the Voice of America. Coming up, Russia's president takes questions from callers that have phoned in. We'll tell you what he said. We'll follow a group of Ukrainian government volunteers as they try to retrieve the bodies of fallen soldiers across enemy lines. And we'll speak to Yemenis exiled by the country's civil war to find out how they're coping with being stuck overseas. I'm Michael Lippin. Russian President Vladimir Putin has accused the United States of trying to dominate international relations. He spoke on Thursday in an annual live question and answer session on Russian television in which he took questions from members of the public. Referring to the United States, Mr. Putin said major superpowers that consider themselves to be the only center of power in the world don't need allies, but rather vassals or slaves. As Charles Maines reports from Moscow, one of the main concerns raised by the callers to the Russian president was the state of the Russian economy.
This was Vladimir Putin's 13th year holding the call-in event, and the Russian president arrived ready for what he admitted had become a traditional first question about the successes and setbacks of the past year. We've run into some outside problems this year, he said, and they've influenced our economic growth and development. But Mr. Putin noted the ruble had strengthened in recent weeks. Inflation had been kept in check. He also pointed to record gains in agriculture and oil production. And he said there was continued growth, even if modest, in the gross domestic product. In short, President Putin's message to Russians, despite Western sanctions and falling world oil prices, the worst was over. The experts see that we've passed through the peak of our problems, he said. We've made corrections to our monetary policy and the system didn't break. Everything still works. Fyodor Krasheninikov, a political analyst based in Ekaterinburg, tells VOA the moment reminded him of the late Soviet period, when communist leaders proudly read lists of economic achievements, most of which were non-existent. The list is there, but the accomplishments aren't, he says, and viewers understand that completely. Putin's positive spin is unconvincing, and he knows it. A state-issued poll showed the economy as the nation's top concern, followed only by inflation. Charles Maines for VOA News, Moscow.
A prominent Ukrainian journalist known for his pro-Russian views has been fatally shot. In a statement on Thursday, Ukraine's Interior Ministry said Oles Buzina, chief editor of the newspaper Sigodnia, was shot near his home in the capital Kiev by two masked gunmen. A similar shooting attack in Kiev on Wednesday killed Oleg Kalashnikov, a former Ukrainian lawmaker loyal to the country's ousted pro-Russian president Viktor Yanukovych. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko said it was evident that the killings have the same origin, and he called for an immediate and transparent investigation. A ceasefire between Ukrainian government troops and pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine has been fraying in recent days, with both sides reporting fatalities and scattered fighting. But that hasn't stopped a team of Ukrainian government volunteers from traveling to the rebels' self-proclaimed Donetsk People's Republic, or DNR, to retrieve the bodies of fallen Ukrainian servicemen. VOA's Adam Bills went with the team and filed this report.
On the road to the village of Savomogila, near the Russian border, the Ukrainian volunteer team called Black Tulip is on a mission to collect bodies of fallen Ukrainian government soldiers from the rebel-held territory. Little remains of the military positions that were here, but there is still danger from landmines and booby traps. Still, the team does this grim work without pay.
There is one body here. We received information from local citizens. There was a fight over here in the end of August. Ukrainian soldiers were pushed back, and one of the soldiers was left here.
Despite coming from Ukrainian government-held territory, the team is able to work in separatist-controlled land through cooperation with militaries on both sides.
We transmit bodies from the Ukrainian side to the DNR side and vice versa. There is an agreement between the government of DNR and the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense, and when this agreement is confirmed, on that day, we are able to cross the border.
More than 6,000 civilians and fighters have died in the conflict in eastern Ukraine over the past year. And with frequent ceasefire violations, the team's work is far from over. Adam Bales of VOA News, Donetsk, eastern Ukraine.
Al-Qaeda militants have taken control of a major airport in Yemen's southern port of Mukalla, where the militants made big territorial gains earlier this month. Yemeni officials say the al-Qaeda fighters faced little resistance from the military on Thursday in Mukalla, the capital of Yemen's largest province, Hadramaut. A major oil terminal in southern Yemen also fell under the control of the militants. While Yemen's ongoing conflict between Iran-backed Houthi rebels and a Saudi-led coalition backing Yemen's exiled leaders has left parts of the country in a vacuum that al-Qaeda has been trying to fill. Yemen's exiled Vice President Khaled Baha has called on all sides in the conflict to engage in peace talks. In a Thursday statement, Baha said he does not want foreign troops in Yemen. Other Yemenis stuck overseas due to the violence say they will gladly return home if they can find a way of doing so. VOA's Heather Murdoch spoke to some of them in Egypt's capital.
At this traditional restaurant, Yemeni people stranded here in Egypt are divided. Some think foreign intervention is necessary to end the war, and others think foreign intervention is the cause of the war. But they agree on one thing. They want to go back to Yemen. Sitting at a table in the Cairo restaurant, he says he was born in Yemen and he plans to die there. Many Yemeni leaders are also out of the country now. Here in Cairo, Yemenis say there may be food, but many can no longer afford housing. Samer Amin is an aid worker trying to get them help. She says she hopes international organizations will find a way to help thousands of Yemeni people stranded abroad to get home. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Cairo.
Thousands of people have marched through the South African city of Durban to protest recent anti-immigrant violence that has killed five people and displaced thousands in the country. Around 4,000 people marched through Durban on Thursday, chanting "Down with xenophobia" and "A United Africa." The marchers included residents, students, and local religious and political leaders. But in a suburb of Johannesburg, a crowd of anti-immigrant protesters gathered on Thursday seeking to attack foreign-owned shops. South African police fired rubber bullets and tear gas to disperse the mob. And before we go, a U.S. Senate panel reached an agreement on Thursday to advance legislation aimed at strengthening President Barack Obama's ability to negotiate trade agreements. If the Trade Promotion Authority, or TPA, bill is passed, supporters hope it will boost U.S. efforts to forge a trade pact with 11 Pacific nations. But critics of the TPA, who include many Democrats and most U.S. unions, see it as a secret deal that will boost corporate profits and hurt American workers. That's it for International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Michael Lippin. We'll see you later.
I'm Jim Stevenson with business news from The Voice of America. U.S. stocks ended marginally lower Thursday as lingering worries about upcoming corporate earnings reports offset enthusiasm about a trio of soaring Wall Street debuts. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell more than 6 points to close at 18,106, the S&P 500 shedding just a point to finish at 2,105, and the Nasdaq composite dropping 3 points. It now sits at 5,007. Atlanta Federal Reserve Bank President Dennis Lockhart said Thursday the recent murky run of U.S. data has him leaning against a June interest rate hike, but added he is confident the economy will remain on track. His remarks to reporters following a lunch with business leaders in West Palm Beach, Florida, added to the impression that the Fed may push its initial rate hike into the fall, an expectation already strong among investors and many economists. The Fed has said it will consider rate hikes on a meeting-by-meeting basis beginning in June. It has not raised rates since 2006, and its key lending rate has been at near zero since late 2008. That, of course, was part of the effort to repair the damage from the 2007-2009 financial crisis and recession. Policymakers have said, though, that a strong run of data in April and May could push the central bank back the other way. Meanwhile, the current head of the Group of 20 Wealthy and Emerging Nations says governments need to do more to jolt the global economy out of the rut that it fell into after the 2008 financial crisis. Turkey's deputy prime minister, who is responsible for that country's economy, said Thursday the worst may be over, but recent economic developments are not yet satisfactory. That's a look at business news from the Voice of America. Diabetes affects about many millions of people in the United States. The consequences, devastating in many cases. But some researchers in Sweden are looking at blood to come up with better early detection methods so that treatment can begin earlier and hopefully greatly improve the outlook for people with the disease. David Byrd has more on this research on Today's Now. First, we visit the American Cafe with Ira Melman to find out how climate change is affecting plants.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. With ongoing concern being expressed over climate change, there is a study out that suggests that modern flowering plants, trees, and agricultural crops may not have the characteristics or the time to respond to the rapid human-induced changes. Roseanne Skirbel is here to tell us all about it.
243 million years ago, flowering plants lived in warm tropical climates. Since then, they've spread across the planet into much harsher places. George Washington University ecologist Amy Zan and her colleagues wanted to understand how the plants survived in a colder environment. They identified three traits that helped them do that: dropping their leaves before the winter chill, narrowing the cells that transport water from the roots to the leaves, and dying back to the ground and resprouting from their roots or seeds in the spring.
The next bit was we wanted to not just look at where species are today and whether they're seeing freezing or not, but to try to understand the evolution of these characteristics and the order of the evolution of those characteristics or those traits.
To do that, the researchers constructed the largest ever time-scaled evolutionary tree of 32,000 plant species. They then compared the emergence of those adaptive traits with big changes in the Earth climate to reconstruct how plants evolved with the cold as they spread across the globe.
And we saw that for all three of the traits, there was a really strong support for finding a shift into freezing and also a shift in the trait. So they went into the cold well-armed with handling those cold temperatures.
Zan and her team also plan to study plants in warm or dry environments. The study suggests that modern flowering plants, trees, and agricultural crops may not have the traits or the time needed to respond to rapid human-induced climate change. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Attending a live musical performance in a large concert hall, arena, or even an outdoor stadium with thousands of other fans is an amazing experience. But here in the U.S., a very different kind of performance space is gaining in popularity. Reporter Mike Osborne takes us to a house concert in Nashville, Tennessee.
Check one, two.
Singer-songwriter Annalise Emmerich is getting ready to play a show. Something she does most nights in coffee houses, bars, auditoriums, and other small venues across the country. But tonight, she'll play for a handful of people in Christina Schultz's living room.
An artist will come into my house and play music, and I don't have to go anywhere. All I have to do is provide the atmosphere, which I am absolutely happy to do.
Schultz has been hosting concerts in her home for about 4 years. She's had as many as 30 people attend, usually a mix of friends, neighbors, family, and even strangers who find the shows listed on house concert websites.
We've done rock, we've had blues, we've had pop, folk, pretty much anything we'll have here.
But this is Annalise Emmerich, and we're very happy to have her straight from East Nashville.
House concerts have become an important part of Emmerich's income.
I can play a bar for $100, but I could play a house concert, and if there's 50 people there and they're all paying $20, like, I'm having a great night, and they're all buying CDs. It's amazing.
So, baby, baby, please come home. Baby, baby, please.
Emmerich says house concert audiences tend to make more dedicated fans. They stay connected, buy her new releases, and show up to hear her the next time she's in town.
It's just a totally unique experience as opposed to playing like a coffee shop or a bar or something like that, where people usually are there, but you don't always know if they're there for you.
Baby, I'm in home, so baby, baby, please come home.
For VOA News, I'm Mike Osborne in Nashville.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Join us on VOA Global and as a podcast, all on voanews.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Diabetes affects about 26 million people in the United States. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that by 2050, one in three Americans could have the disease. Of those with diabetes, about 5% have so-called type 1 or juvenile diabetes. The autoimmune disease often appears in early childhood and causes the pancreas not to produce enough insulin to control blood sugar. The consequences can be devastating. But now, through a joint study involving universities in Sweden, Germany, Finland, and the United States, researchers have come up with a new way of looking at the blood that makes it possible to detect the disease and start treatment earlier. Uka Lernmark is a lead researcher at Sweden's Lund University. He is also part of the so-called TEDI program. TEDI stands for the Environmental Determinants of Diabetes in the Young.
So the TEDI study has discovered that the appearance of autoantibodies against the insulin-producing cells appear during the first years of life, but the disease is not diagnosed until some 10 years later.
Lernmark says that the study gives scientists the ability to look for what triggers diabetes and speeds up the time to diagnose the disease.
We now know where to look for the trigger. So we have to explain why these autoantibodies develop. And now we know that we should look during the first years of life.
The TEDI study was funded by the U.S. National Institutes of Health. It involved 8,600 children who have an increased hereditary risk of type 1 diabetes. The study has revealed triggers in children at a much earlier age than was possible before. Lernmark says that he would like to test all Swedish children at age 4.
For the first time, it will allow the researchers to look to study the mechanisms that trigger this disease, because in the past we didn't know when to look.
The discovery could help doctors treat children earlier and use lower doses of insulin. It could even help patients to postpone or avoid symptoms as the disease develops. Fredrik Niklasson has a son and two daughters who have been part of the TEDI study in Sweden. He keeps regular and detailed diaries of what his kids eat, and they have to give blood and other body tissue samples. But Niklasson says they don't mind the regular checks because it doesn't feel much like a hospital visit.
Well, I think they think it's quite fun most of the time, because it also involves some blood sampling. But in our family, that's been not a big issue.
Doctors still don't know what triggers the immune system to start attacking the pancreas's insulin-producing cells. Lernmark says that one theory is a viral infection. He says his hope is that a vaccine could be developed that would stop the original problem before the immune system kicks in.
So let's assume or hypothesize that there is a virus being responsible to trigger these islet autoantibodies. The goal is, of course, then to make a vaccine against that virus. And if that would be the discovery, then the chances to prevent type 1 diabetes altogether is very high.
To learn more about the TEDI study, log on to www.TEDI, that's TEDDY, .epi.usf.edu. And let us know your opinion on this story or anything you hear on our program by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And you can email us at voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
After After being asked to weigh her bag before boarding VietJet, passenger Nguyen Thi Hang slapped an airline worker when she was told her bag was overweight. The airline requires luggage to weigh about 7 kilos or 15 and a half pounds. Hang didn't agree with the airline worker's findings. She hauled back and slapped him. Airport officials, as you might imagine, responded quickly. She was fined about the equivalent of $345. That was more than she would have had to pay for her overweight bag. It's time for sports on the Voice of America. I'm Jim Stevenson. It was a day of tennis drama at the Monte Carlo Rolex Masters Thursday. Catherine Whittaker is courtside where one of the top players and perennial fan favorites is out.
Shockwaves reverberated around the Monte Carlo Country Club today as world number two Roger Federer was beaten 6-4, 7-6 by Frenchman Gael Monfils.
I mean, definitely it's the very beginning of the clay court season. It's going to take me some time to feel 100% comfortable. Was he feeling 100% comfortable? You know, I don't know. Probably not many guys are perfect this week, but it was a good week for me anyways, you know.
Monfils now plays Grigor Dimitrov in the quarters. Narrowly avoiding his own upset was Rafael Nadal. He narrowly scraped past American John Isner. That win for Nadal means his quest for a ninth title here in Monte Carlo will resume tomorrow against countryman David Ferrer. And elsewhere, Novak Djokovic extended his ATP World Tour winning streak to 14 matches and now faces US Open champion Marin Cilic. And wins for Tomas Berdych and Milos Raonic today mean they will also face off for a semi-final place. Catherine Ritiker for VOA Sports, Monte Carlo.
Chinese golfer Huang Wenyi holds the early lead at the Shenzhen International. He's an unsung 34-year-old, currently at 6 under par after an opening 66, and holds a one-shot lead. Nick Dai is there, where twice Masters champion Bubba Watson is 4 shots off the pace after the first day.
Huang is a late starter. He was 22 when he first played. That's a year older than last week's Masters winner Jordan Spieth. He'd had to work on a building site prior to that to provide for his parents after his father had suffered an industrial accident. He says he hasn't played this well since a superb top 10 finish out of the blue in Germany 2 years ago.
Today putter and iron and the driver, yeah, very good. Yeah, everybody, two bogey, Germany. BMW, yeah, last day and my 65 finish.
He's one clear of 4 players, including Peter Uihlein, who's back after injury, and Anbian Hun, who made a hole-in-one in his round of 67. Watson's taking time to get used to the grainy greens of Shenzhen Golf Club and counts himself fairly pleased with an opening round of 70.
That's Nick Dai. I'm Jim Stevenson with sports.
Hi, I'm Ray McDonald on The Voice of America, and this is the Top 5 Countdown. We're tallying the 5 most popular songs in the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles chart for the week ending April 18th, 2015. The chart gets all shook up this week, but nothing really changes. Let's open in 5th place where Ed Sheeran drops 2 slots with Thinking Out Loud. Now, Ed may not be the most exciting artist in the world, but that's not a bad thing. Details are on the way.
Take me into your loving arms. Kiss me under the light of 1,000 stars. Place your head on my beating heart. I'm thinking out.
Ed Sheeran slips 2 slots to number 5 with Thinking Out Loud. This week, Spotify said Ed dominates sleep-themed playlists all over the world. In fact, Thinking Out Loud is the number 1 song for listeners who want to get a little shut-eye. If you're feeling a bit drowsy right now, maybe The Weeknd can wake you up. He brought a lot of buzz to Coachella last Saturday. Hold on for more.
'Cause girl, you're perfect. You're always worth it. And you deserve it, the way you work it, 'cause girl, you earned it, girl, you earned it, yeah.
The Weeknd kicks it up a slot to fourth place with Earned It, 50 Shades of Grey. The Canadian native earned a choice slot at California's Coachella Festival on Saturday, closing the day's performances on the main stage. He started 20 minutes late, but by all accounts thrilled the crowd, and he'll be back on the 18th. 3 years ago, The Weeknd made his Coachella debut, playing before just a few hundred people in a daytime slot. Rising a notch to number three is The Weeknd's 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack companion, Ellie Goulding. Love Me Like You Do is already one of the year's biggest hits in the United Kingdom. Stay with me for more. Ellie Goulding rises a slot to number three with Love Me Like You Do. Not only did this song spend a month at number one in Ellie's native United Kingdom, it's also the number two single of 2015. The official charts company ranks it behind Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars' Uptown Funk and ahead of Hozier's Take Me to Church. Here in the United States, Maroon 5 remains stuck in the runner-up slot with Sugar. Now, while this song may not yet wear the crown, it's ringing up huge sales. Details are on the way. Sugar. Five spends yet another week in second place with Sugar. This song just went double platinum in the United States, signifying sales of 2 million copies. It's Maroon 5's second straight double platinum smash. Animals currently stands at 2.18 million sales, according to Nielsen figures. Up at number one, it's still Mark Ronson's world. We just live in it. He and Bruno Mars spend a 14th week at the top with Uptown Funk.
Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girl, set you hallelujah. Girl, set you hallelujah. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Saturday night and we in the spot. Don't believe me, just watch.
Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars rule the Hot 100 roost for an incredible 14th week with Uptown Funk. Only seven other songs have lasted this long or longer at number one, the most recent being I Got a Feeling by the Black Eyed Peas. It topped the list for 14 weeks back in 2009. Can Mark and Bruno make the magic last? We'll find out next week, and thank you for joining me today. I'm Ray McDonald with the Top 5 Countdown on The Voice of America.
An office manager was arraigned Thursday in New York on charges that she posed as a dentist when the real dentist was away, and she seriously injured patients, according to that, after pulling their teeth, performing root canals on them, and injecting their mouths, according to prosecutors. Valbona Yaziraj said she trained as a dentist in her native Albania, but doesn't happen to be licensed or trained in New York. She pleaded not guilty as a result in Bronx Supreme Court to 5 counts of unauthorized practice of a profession, 4 counts of assault, 3 counts of reckless endangerment, and 1 count of attempted grand larceny. That's because one of the patients Yazari treated between late 2012 and the summer of 2013 got an infection after a root canal. Another still feels pain 2 years after being treated by her, according to prosecutors. She performed patients at Dr. Jeffrey Schoengold's Ultimate Dental Care of Riverdale in the Bronx, and while he was away, he says that he discovered her unsanctioned side business. He fired her, and then she tried to steal more than $20,000 from him, according to the prosecutors. An attorney for Yaziraj did not immediately return a message seeking a comment. A judge set her bail at $20,000. She's barred from going near any dental practices during the duration of her case, and I guess maybe beyond that. We're at the end of our case for today. We like to thank Tracy Carter as our director, engineer Dave Magnus, and our managing editor Diane Gao. I'm Jim Stevenson, hoping your teeth and everything else feels great this weekend. Join us again Monday for VOA Global.